Good evening, everybody. Good. Okay. Welcome to the first evening of Buddhism in a Nutshell. My name is Sandy Carlson, and I'll be leading the class tonight. Kim, you look cold. Are you? Is everybody else too cold? We can turn. Because I made it cold because I'll get hot. And this is, after all about me. I'll get you a better blanket. Yeah. Personal summers. So we're gonna do some really basic meditation. We're gonna cover some logistics real quickly, but we're gonna be doing some basic meditation here because it's such an introduction to Buddhism. So if you're sitting in a chair, you might want to look around on the floor for one of those cushions, just so that you've got something to put your feet on, because sometimes it just makes it a little bit more comfortable, or your feet get cold. So let's just go ahead and, you know, come on in, grab a cushion. Feel free. This is going to be a very relaxed class, okay? So as we try these different meditations, we do this different discussion. If anybody wants to get down and sit on the mat while we try meditation and then get up to a chair, just, you know, check it out. This is actually the time and the place to do that. I turned my cell phone off. So let's let everybody make sure you've got your cell phones off. And so before we get started, what I'd like to do, and this is going to feel funny, but I'm hoping that this is the start of a 5-week discussion class. I'd like to go around the room and have everybody introduce themselves and just give a very brief explanation, maybe one or two sentences about who you are, where you're from, any experience with Buddhism, or how, you know, what you're looking for here, because we have people that are from all different walks of life, from all different religions, from all different backgrounds. And I like to kind of get a gauge of who I've got in the classroom as we talk, and this really creates an open discussion time. I'm going to try to get to a discussion just about on every class. So I'd like to really just go around the class, introduce yourself, tell me where you're from, what your experience with Buddhism has been, and what brings you to this class. So literally, I'm going to use this microphone, okay? So we're going to start using this mic when we have a discussion. It does two things. First of all, it allows everybody knows who's talking by who has the microphone, and then we do record the audio from these classes so that we can go back, refer to them. It's just the audio. Nobody's, you know, going to see your face or your name or anything like that, so you still have all the anonymity that you wish. But this way we just are able to just hear the questions, because there's nothing worse when you're listening to an audio tape and you hear the answer but you never heard the question. That's really an irritant of mine, so I'm going to try. Let's help me to remember to use the microphone. Okay, sir.
Hi, my name's Gary Mickey. I live in Raleigh.
Okay.
I lived in San Francisco for a number of years.
Okay.
And had a lot of experience with Buddhism then. And I moved to New Jersey and just experienced survival for a number of years.
I know that one too.
And so I would say it's intermittent, and would like to become more structured.
Okay. Have you ever been to Kadampa Center before?
Last night.
Oh.
For the beginning of the 2 years.
Excellent. We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
So good. That's phenomenal.
And it was great.
Okay, Gary. Perfect. Thank you. I will not remember names, but I will try. Okay, so we'll just make a first pass at it.
My name is Kim Crawford. I'm from Burlington. I have limited experience. I've known Sandy for 3 years, and she finally got me to come.
I did. I roped her into it.
My name is John Grant, and I'm from Raleigh. I have no experience.
Just curious. It's okay.
I've read some of the history in books about climbing Everest from the early 20th century in some of the monasteries up there, and then I've read some books on Buddhism, but don't really know much. I've tried meditation a few times, and I've been wanting to come down here for several years, and finally got around to it.
That's perfect. Is this your first time to get up a center tonight?
Well, for a class, I've come in and looked at books before. But
Okay, welcome. Perfect.
Hi, my name is Chris. I've always wanted to try or learn more about Buddhism. I live in Raleigh, about a mile away, and with the help of my friend, she found the course, and so thought it'd be a good idea. And also in the 2-year course starting last night.
Perfect. That's really good. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Leah, and I've been exposed to Buddhism in my travels, and it just piqued my interest enough that I want to learn more.
Okay, perfect.
My name is Byron. I'm from Durham. And I've had some experience in the past, but want to reconnect now.
Okay, perfect.
My name is Carol. I'm from Raleigh. No experience with Buddhism. This is my first visit here to the facility. Just what very little I've read seems to align with what I think my core beliefs are. So I'm here to get exposure and learn more.
Scott Lee. I'm from Raleigh. I learned a little bit of Buddhism through YouTube and videos and stuff like that.
That's so right.
I'm not expecting anything. I'm just learning, just seeing how it goes.
Just curious. Okay.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I'm a student at NC State. I took a mindfulness meditation class through the counseling center last semester, and like she said, just Buddhism kind of aligns with my values anyway, so I'd like to learn more about it.
Okay, perfect.
I'm Paige. I'm from Raleigh and have no experience, but just coming to learn more.
The right class, yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I live in Raleigh, and I'm very curious about to see what is Buddhism.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jean, and I was actually in the spring session of the Introduction to Meditation class.
Yeah.
And I got interested to see what else you guys are about besides meditation, so that's why I'm here.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Naga. I'm from Durham, and I've been studying Buddhism with different teachers on the internet or live, so I just wanted to see.
What cut off is that your head? Okay, perfect.
Hi, I'm Leslie. I'm from Raleigh. I've just done some reading, read some books, and really made sense to me, and I just wanted to take the next step.
Okay.
Learn more.
Hi, my name's Alex. I live in Raleigh. I just moved here from New York. I've been interested in Buddhism for about 3 years. My introduction to it was through Zen. I've been reading about it, and I've been hooked for about 3 years. Very interested.
Okay, perfect.
My name is Marianne. I grew up in Raleigh. And I went to see the Dalai Lama speak in Washington, D.C. when I was pregnant with this one. And
we already met.
Yeah, they knew that.
And wanted to learn more. And I've been here a few times. And the teachings, what I've heard thus far, really resonates with me. But I wanted to know more. So, I decided to try to come. I'm a single mom, so I had to drag this one along. So we'll see how it goes.
This is a ringer. Go for it.
Hello, everyone. My name is Patty, and I've been coming to the center for a couple of years now, and I absolutely love this center. And I'm so pleased to be here to preview the class with Sandy, with the aspirations that one day I may lead the class at some point in the future. So I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
Hi, how are you? My name is Susana. I moved from Miami 1 year ago. I'm originally from Uruguay, South America. And when I was in Miami, I worked with a doctor that was a Buddhist and, you know, a dentist. Mm-hmm. So I have a vivid experience about Buddhism, but I want to learn more myself.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
I'm Adam from Raleigh. Taking a couple classes in college and just want to learn more, explore it a little farther.
I'm Maggie. I want to take this class to kind of kick off my journey with Buddhism. I know I've kind of discovered it recently that it aligns with my beliefs as well. So I thought this would be a great way to kind of start that journey.
I'm Carol. I'm from Raleigh. I was introduced to meditation about 20 years ago, and I've read some Zen books, and I started coming here in the spring, sat in on the meditation class, and just felt like I was missing the beginning part, so I thought I'd take the class.
Okay.
I'm Nigel. I'm living in Hillsborough. I'm originally from Scotland. I've been reading and meditating on my own, but I wanted to get more knowledge, get more grounded, and hopefully find people where I live that I can meet with on a regular basis.
Hi, I'm Alan, from a small tobacco town in the southeastern part of the state, but live in Raleigh now. I've been reading a lot about Buddhism, and I've been a lifelong Methodist, and that's not working for me anymore. I want to find something different. Thank you.
I'm Doug from Raleigh, and I've been coming here. I've been here several times over the last several years. I've traveled extensively in Southeast Asia, and I'm going to Vietnam for 6 months in January.
Hi, my name is Fanny, and I'm originally from Cyprus. I came a few times to the center throughout the spring, last spring, and I would like to take the course to start again from the beginning and make sure I get, you know, what I need to from this course.
Hi, I'm Ashley. We live in Raleigh now. We moved about 7 months ago from Denver, and we've been coming to the center for the last few months. And I've always been interested in Buddhism, and I wanted to take this course to try to refresh my knowledge of Buddhism and kind of start myself on a journey for a more peaceful life.
Hi, my name is Tan. I am originally from Savannah, Georgia, but I live in Clayton. I've studied and read a few books for the past couple of years, and I'm just here to gain more knowledge.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Guillermo. The nickname is Willie.
Willie.
Born and raised in Mexico. We moved to Atlanta 15 years ago, last week to Raleigh.
Okay. Welcome to Raleigh.
Now a new American.
Congratulations. Welcome.
Thank you. And I was reading and attending a Buddhist center in Atlanta after trying to find different ways to move in the spiritual path, you know? And I went first to the Buddhism, and then I tried another things, and at the end I returned to the Buddhism. Now I'm trying to, with all the things that I was hearing and reading, and now I'm trying to start again, perhaps more structure, you know, here. One message for the stars told me that the move to Raleigh could be very beneficial for me joining a spiritual community. I came here for like 4 times, and the way I found the center was for when I moved to Raleigh at the center in Atlanta, I asked for a Buddhist center here with the people in Atlanta. And the founder of the center over there is Lobsang Tenzin, told me that I have a friend in Raleigh that is Don Brown.
Yep.
And he told me about the Kadampa Center. So that's why I came here. And the times that I have here, like 4 or 5 times, I really enjoy and make the connection here.
Okay, good. Perfect.
Hi, I'm Kirsten. I live in Raleigh, and just echoing what a lot of everybody else has said, done some reading. Buddhism aligns with a lot of my core beliefs. I have several friends who are Buddhist who have been sort of nudging me in this direction, and I'm looking sort of for core background information, and also looking for some community.
Okay.
Hey, everyone. My name's Kevin, I'm from Raleigh. I've been meditating on and off for about a year, coming to the center since the summertime. Raised a Catholic, but interested in learning some of the foundational aspects of Buddhism that we either glossed over or didn't address.
Hello, everybody. I'm Claudia. I'm from Mexico, but I live in Wake Forest. I have been practicing Buddhism for a couple years, but then I stopped when I had my children about 2 years ago. And with my second child, I went through postpartum depression, so I'm kind of like hoping to get back into community, because I was doing it by myself. I wasn't like doing it in a community or at a temple or anything. So yeah, hopefully this will be a good fit for me.
Okay.
Steve, I'm going to have you introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Steve Hale. I'm a member of Kadampa. I've been coming here for several years. Sandy taught the first class I ever attended here, and I think this is the first time she's taught since then.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Thank you for coming back.
Chris? So I'm introducing some of the members of Kadampa Center because there are many times that I brain fart or just kind of go blank. And Chris Baranski has been actually one of my, I'd actually call him a co-teacher because he's really good at explaining some of the bigger concepts and stuff too. He takes care of the audio too, so these are all volunteers. But Chris, introduce yourself and give a little background.
Yeah, I'm Chris, and my sole purpose here at the center is to help Sandy. No, I'm just kidding. I've been with this center since about 2002, and it just seems to fit exactly with what I think. It's eerie. So I hope you enjoy what you learn here, and it works for you. Oh, and I do stuff with the recordings, and we provide the recordings. If you miss a class, you can listen to it, or if you just want to listen to it again to, you know, see what was said.
Is it still behind the members only area?
No,
anybody
not.
Has access
anybody
to it now,
access.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Just by clicking on.
Yeah, you can go to recordings on the website and it's all available.
And it's all there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Brian. I help Chris. And that's about it. I've been here for 4 years.
I'm making them introduce themselves because if I go blank, that's who I point to, okay? Or sometimes if I don't go blank, if I just need to be quiet for a little bit. It's, they've got as much, if not more, knowledge than I do. I just happen to talk a lot, so they stick me in this chair. So just to settle everybody down from everything that I've heard here, it's always interesting to me to see the similarities of the thing. So again, commonalities, because we're all pretty much starting in different places, but there's so many similarities to what we're either looking for or just curious about. This is not, Kadampa Center is not about proselytizing. We are not about converting people. Okay, the tools and the things that you learn here in Kadampa Center, we have people of all faiths and backgrounds and all ages and all needs coming to Kadampa Center. You're going to find everybody from doctors and scientists to yoga teachers. I'm in marketing. It's all open. It all works. We have a lot of students that come here from the different colleges and from the different spiritual program classes that they come from. And a lot of people are just here out of curiosity. So for whatever reason that you're here, it's all good. It's all okay. We are a very, very open group here. Again, this particular class, we try to, I try in the way that I lead the classes, we're going to hopefully have a lot of discussion. Let me give you a little bit of the background for myself. I'm one of the fortunate ones. My parents, my father was Lutheran and my mother was Catholic, and way back in the day they weren't even allowed to get married. Okay, so they eloped. My father was in the military and we traveled the world, but their start actually kind of opened their eyes to a lot of different things when it comes to spirituality and religion and all of those things. And so they opened the entire world up to us kids. They taught us everything. They just opened the whole world up. So actually, I'm Buddhist, my brother's Catholic, and my sister's Lutheran. It all works. So we have a real hodgepodge come Christmas. But it is. It's all good. I'm just one of the fortunate ones that I was able to start on this path very early. I played around with it. I didn't really label myself Buddhist for the longest time, and I had a lot of book learning and a lot of what I would call theoretical knowledge, and it's really been in just the last, 7 years, 7 or 8 years, Patty, it's not two, I mean, we've been here for a while, since I started here at Kadampa Center and actually started with the real teachers, true teachers. that I all of a sudden things really clicked into place for me, and all of a sudden all those things, those black holes that I had from just reading, just seemed to make more sense. And it just fell into more place for me. So I got a lot more experiential knowledge, and I understood everything quite a bit better. And that's when things just really started clicking for me. And so for whatever reason you have, for whatever need that you have, make sure that you get out of this class what you're looking for. We'll open this up. We'll open it up to questions. This is a very introductory class. So we have 5 weeks that we're going to do this on Tuesday nights for maybe an hour and a half. And we have a lot of ground to cover. So do not think that you're going to get done with this class and you're going to know about Buddhism. It doesn't work that way. We are going to skip across the top of these topics. All right? And I'm going to try really, really hard to keep us there. Okay, I really don't want to do any deep diving. We have other classes for that. We're going to have the discussion about karma and emptiness and all of these terms. And my job, the way that I see my purpose here, is to just give you that brief overview that at least allows you to have a little bit more knowledge for when you do want to take more classes and more learning and do some things and just kind of get your you know, first step on that rung of that ladder of knowledge, not for converting. But what we're all trying to do is the simple fact of we're all trying to be a little bit happier. Okay? I mean, that's basically the bottom line. And I don't care what label you put on that. If we can just get some of that done, then I'm thrilled that I've done, that's all I need to do. We're never going to finish everything. I do tend to get a little excited. I'm very calm right now. But once we get going, I do tend to get a little animated because I love this class. This is one of my favorite things to do here, and I am very excitable. And so, believe me, I'm going to get up. We're going to be moving around. I'm going to make y'all talk because that's what it is experiential for me. So I just want you to feel free to ask questions and kind of get rolling on some of this stuff. Logistics. Bathrooms, if you go out that door and take a left, they're right around the corner there. There's no problems. If you need to go during the class, get up and go. There's water and coffee. Go get yourself something to drink. There's glasses out there. There's cups. Bring it in here, okay? But at the end of the night, you take it in the kitchen and you wash it because I've got enough dishes at home, all right? We are all volunteers here. So y'all police yourselves for that stuff. But this is a comfortable place. I want you to enjoy it. Help yourself to things. The kitchen is back around the corner. We can tend to get, now this isn't a too big of a class, so I'm not that worried about parking because sometimes we can get real full here. But I guarantee you, maybe within a couple of weeks, we'll probably have a few people that drop out because I'm boring or, you know, this isn't quite what they want. So, you know, that's okay too. I will try to start and stop on time, so usually the classes will run from 7 to 8:30. We are going to be going for 5 weeks, September 13th through October 11th. This time we're not going to have any interruptions. Sometimes we have different pujas or prayer gatherings, different things that happen, but this time I believe we're running consecutive nights, which is great. You will gain the most benefit from attending all 5 sessions, but, you know, I'm not going to chain you to the chair. If you miss a night, just come on the next night and don't worry about it. There are no tests, okay? So it's nothing like that. You can drop out if you decide you're having a good time. You want to drag a friend along, do it. You know, like I said, I'm not attendance cop at all for this class. So recommended books. So we don't have any tests or anything, but we do have some books that we would recommend for this class. This is Buddhism in a nutshell. The majority of what I talk about in this class is from this book. And this book was written by a true teacher, Venerable Amy Miller, who's one of the traveling teachers from the FPMT, where I'll tell you all about everything. This book is really, really good. It's the basis for learning for this class. She even has an audio CD in the back. Now, I've got to skip over all of these times. We're going to have discussion. We're going to have breaks. So I've got like an hour and a half when you really cut down to it, plus my ramblings that I'm going to do. You know, we probably have maybe 50 minutes of really good teaching time. Well, she's got 2 hours a session here. So she goes in much more depth than we can in class. So I really recommend, if you're interested at all, this is a great book. And it's where we get it. Venerable Amy Miller is a Western nun, Tibetan
Buddhist nun who used to be at Milarepa up in Vermont, but now she's actually traveling more. But she does come here sometimes. I think she was just here a few months ago, and I'm not sure when she's coming back. She's a phenomenal teacher. I recommend this book highly. For those of you that have been talking about meditation, this book by Kathleen McDonald on how to meditate, it's a very basic book. We're going to cover some of the meditations and things in here. Meditation is the tool that we use. It's the main tool that we use. This class, Buddhism in a Nutshell, and our other introductory class, Meditation 101, some of you said you've already been to that class. These two classes alternate, okay, every 5 weeks. So we'll have this class for 5 weeks. We'll probably take a little bit of a break. Then we'll have Meditation 101 for 5 weeks, where it'll be just class on meditation only, and then this class. So these classes alternate. We also have on Monday nights, you guys are all starting at like this perfect congruence of time here. Monday nights we have our course called Discovering Buddhism. That is a 2-year course that has 14 different modules that all last for like 5 or 6 weeks. The 2-year course just started the first round last night, Mind and Its Potential. That's the first round of this 2-year course. I cannot recommend that class highly enough. In fact, if you can only choose to come to one of these classes, it's up to you which one you come to. This is the very introductory class. If you feel good here, that's fine. Robbie Watkins, who's also our center director, is teaching Mind and Its Potential, and that's one of my all-time favorite classes because it really gets into what the mind is. He has 5 weeks to talk about it, whereas I'm going to have like 15 minutes. Okay, so we're going to skip over some of the top. If you can do both, that's great. If you can't, whichever one you choose is fine, but you just have this beautiful opportunity. Now, the other thing is if you can't make it and you choose to stay with me, which I'm okay about, that class is also being recorded, so you can hear it later if you want to stick with me and then maybe listen to that class afterwards and then go on to the next module, then that's okay too. I just always want to tell people, you know, kind of what your next step might be. And that's a phenomenal, you can go in and out. Again, if you want to just observe that class and go learn, you can. If you want to sit and go through the whole 2 years and take the test and become certified, you know, go for it. I've taken all courses. I've done the 2-year thing. The 14th module is a lot of work, so I'm still working on my certification. It's probably going to be a long time before I get it, just because of my time. But it's a phenomenal course, and that is a wonderful next step as well. And we just started the next 2-year module. Wednesday nights is a Lam Rim class with Geshe Gelug Choda. Again, I'm going to tell you about a lot of this stuff, and then we'll get down to some of our things. Wednesday night is a little bit of a deeper dive. The Lam Rim is kind of the overview of the path. We'll talk about the Lam Rim and what that is maybe the second or third night of this course. But that's on Wednesday nights. Friday night is a basic program, and that's a deep dive. Y'all don't even want to go there. You can sit. I don't even think y'all, that's requisite, right? We don't have too many classes that have to have requisites, but that one does. So, you're going to see, look on the Kadampa Center calendar to see what events we have. You're going to see things called pujas. In fact, there's a Medicine Buddha puja coming up pretty soon. A puja is a prayer gathering. And the best way I can explain that is when you've got a broom, that little whisk broom, and if you only have one piece of whisk, you're not going to move that dirt around. You get many of them together and bundle it, and you can sweep that floor and move the dirt. Prayer gathering is many voices together in one prayer. So that's the Medicine Buddha Puja. We have several different pujas. We have a Tara practice night. And again, I'll explain some of these things further on in the class. But you might see this on the calendar, and I look and see what's going on at Kadampa Center. We have a lot of classes, a lot of opportunities, and there's a lot of information on that website. The website is Kadampa Center, kadampa-center.org. So if you go to Kadampa Center, and then to see, because we have handouts for this class. So I'm going to do another thing. How many, I don't know how y'all found this class. Was it Facebook? Raise your hand if it was Facebook. How did you find it? You just Googled and went to the website and saw the class? Cool. All right. Google.
All right. Because we've tried different things, and we're just trying to see how we're putting out. So you all looked for us. We didn't reach out. And I was Facebook. My husband found it for me. Oh, look, someplace for you. You will be surprised to hear that Raleigh is the 10th largest city in the United States for Buddhism. That's a statistic that just came out not too long ago. There's everything from Vietnamese and Chinese centers. But yeah, Raleigh is the number 10th in the U.S. as far as a Buddhist population. That's interesting statistics. When you go to the website and you click on spiritual program, and then there's a drop down and it will say beginner courses, introductory courses. If you click on introductory courses, you'll come up to Buddhism in a Nutshell and Meditation 101. If you click on Buddhism in a Nutshell, then at the bottom of that page we have several handouts. Okay, and I'm going to be referring to these handouts. If you want them, you can get them there. But that's like the 7-point meditation posture is going to be there. There'll be a couple of meditations on there. The Four Noble Truths is one of the teachings that we're going to be really focusing on, and there's a handout for that as well. So go check that out. My email is sandy@blueyonder.tv. sandy@blueyonder.tv. I hope that you will ask questions in class that you feel comfortable, but if you want to email me a question, if you're more comfortable doing it that way, you know, I'll put it out there. If you need to reach me, that's how you can do it. But I don't know everything. In fact, I don't know most things, but I know people who do. And so that's actually what I'll do. If I get questions that I really don't understand or I'm not sure about, I'll actually reach out to the people that do. Geshe Gelug Choda, our resident teacher, some of the higher, more advanced students and stuff. So if I don't know the question, I'll find you an answer. Okay? But feel free to email me if you'd like to. We're just getting these logistics down. So I think right now, time's going to go. Okay. We're going to do a brief meditation. Okay? Your intro to meditation. All right? Now, if many of you have been saying that you've meditated, we're going to talk about Tibetan Buddhist meditation. We're going to talk about all of that in some depth. But right now, I want to go through just a very brief meditation because it's the main tool. It's the main way that Buddhists work with their minds. Okay, so I'd like you to get comfortable in your chair, and we're going to go through what's called the 7-point meditation posture. Okay, some of you are sitting in a chair, some of you are sitting on the mat. Let's kind of go through this. All of this is common sense. There is nothing holy about sitting on a mat. It does not mean because somebody's sitting down there in the full Vajra position that they're going to be better meditating than you are. It has nothing to do with it. This is all about your mind. I have a bum knee. I can't sit down there. So I've had to learn how to do it in the chair. You can do it lying down, but that's probably going to put you to sleep, and that certainly isn't where you want to go with that either. So there's a full-on meditation posture that every reason that we do this, and I'm going to go through it and explain it, and then we'll actually do it. But there's a reason that we do this, and it's all based on common sense. Now, I'm going to probably read more of this because I tend to do it so quickly now. I've been doing it for so long that I don't think about it as well as I should. So to make sure that you guys think about it, I'm going to go ahead and just read part of this. Okay, the 7-point meditation posture, first is your legs. So if you're sitting on the ground, you can do the Vajra position, half Vajra, cross your legs, whatever's comfortable for you down there. What we're looking for with the base, what we're looking for with the legs is to give you a solid foundation, because the goal is for you to be in such a solid foundation that you can forget about your body and just work with your mind. But it's really hard to work with your mind when your leg falls asleep. It's really hard to work with your mind when you're all of a sudden get a cramp in your leg because you're trying the Vajra position and it's not working. So it's get yourself in a comfortable position. When you're sitting on a chair, don't sit full back. Sit up a little bit so that we're not resting, because we don't want to be so relaxed that you could actually fall asleep. So you want to sit up, put your legs on the ground, both feet on the ground. One of the reasons that I put the cushion on there is because sometimes these floors get a little cold, but you just want to get a full base going. Your arms, okay, hold your hands loosely in your lap. In our tradition, okay, the Tibetan Buddhist and the Gelugpa tradition, we'll explain all this later, we put the right hand loosely on the left, put your thumbs together in a little bit of a teardrop, put it in your lap so that it's just a few inches below your navel, and that causes your arms to go out a little bit, okay? So why does this work? Well, guess what? If you're sitting for a long period of time, it allows airflow to go through so that you don't get as hot as when you're sitting like this. So again, it's all common sense. Ain't nothing holy about it, okay? It's common sense, all right? Have your back, your arms and shoulders are going to be relaxed. Have your back straight, not super stiff, but kind of like you're a stack of coins, and you want your shoulders to be back. I call it more of a type of regal position. Why is that? It expands your lungs. It lets your lungs breathe a little bit more. It gives you better airflow in and out of your lungs. So again, this is all based on, and it may feel funny at first to be doing all these things. Honestly, I've been doing it for so many years, I can fall into the position immediately. Anybody that does this for a long time can do it. Now, some people that have been doing this in other traditions and stuff, if you're more comfortable with your hands on your knees, then that's okay too. I'm going to explain how we do it, but whatever really works for you. You see in some of the other traditions, well, you see people, you know, holding their hands, different mudras, these mean different things. That's not something we really get into in this tradition too much, and I'm not going to go there, but just to explain that that's what that is. Okay, so you'll see people holding different mudras, and that's what they're doing. It means something to them. Okay, we basically sit, again, with our hands together on arms. Back is straight. The eyes are slightly open and focused on the floor, just a few, maybe a couple feet in front of you. If you need to meditate with your eyes closed to avoid the distractions, then do so. But we don't want you to fall asleep. So if you have your eyes looking forward, it's too easy to get distracted. If you have your eyes closed, it's too easy to fall asleep. So if you try to have your eyes in kind of an unfocused manner in front of you, it blocks out some of the distractions, but they're not closed so that you won't go to sleep. Again, I'm going to explain to you how to do it, then y'all take it and work with it to see what works for you. Jaws and mouth. You want your jaw to be loose, a little comfortable. You don't want to be clenched tooth, because if you're clenched, then it just doesn't seem to work. We usually put our tongue on the top of our palate behind our teeth. Why? Because it helps to diminish some of the saliva. Because again, what we're trying to do is just create this atmosphere where we can just not think about our body, so we can focus on what we're focusing on with our minds. Again, nothing's holy about this. It's like we're talking saliva, airflow, comfort. You know, it's this. This is a position that has been worked on for thousands of years. So I pretty much trust that they know what they're talking about. The head is tightly, slightly tilted forward. So the way that I try to think about this is, if I have a string from the crown of my head and I pull it, then that elongates my neck, gets my eyes in the right position, and keeps my spine and my head kind of over my spine. So that's the 7-point meditation posture. So the legs, arms, back, eyes, jaw and mouth, tongue, and head. Okay, so the first thing that we're going to do is kind of go down, so close your eyes if you need to, or just slightly open in front of you. Okay, scan your body, you know, mentally scan your body, see if you've got any issues. If you're sitting, you know, on your jacket and have a fold in there, you need to move it, just go for it. And first we're going to do 3 deep breaths. We want the stomach and lungs to expand. Now allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. We begin every meditation by setting our motivation, which is the reason that we're doing it. Why am I doing this? Why, out of all the things I could be doing right now, am I sitting on a cushion at Kadapa Center with my eyes closed? Whatever reason prompted you to do it is great. If you hear out of curiosity, that's good. If you're here to see if this quiets your mind and helps release some stress, that's great. If you're here because you want to be a kinder person, that's wonderful. But it said that the best motivation, the most powerful one, is that if we think something just as simple as this, just sitting quietly for a couple of minutes is being done by me,
so that I can benefit all living beings. And that probably sounds totally ridiculous to you right now. But even just thinking that way, even if we just kind of have to force out that thought process, it's said to make an imprint on our mind that because of the laws of karma will eventually ripen in a positive way in the future. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. This will have a beneficial result at some time in the future. So grit your teeth, force it out. This is called the Mahayana Great Motivation. So just sit with that for a little bit. Now, having set our motivation, we're now going to begin an actual meditation. We're going to do a simple but not easy concentration meditation. All we're going to do is pay attention to our breath, the movements of our breath in and out through our nostrils. Place your awareness on that, nothing more, nothing less. The mind perceives the breath. You could almost say that the mind and the breath are one. We're not describing the breath. We're not counting the breath. We are just directly experiencing the breath. Every time that you notice that your mind is experiencing something else, a sound, a sore muscle, if you start thinking about what you need to do when you leave here, if you have a memory about something that happened earlier today, just drop that thought and come back to the breath. Over and over and over. The mind is becoming familiar with the experience of the breath. And that's the meditation, just coming back to the breath over and over. We're going to end our meditation with what we call a dedication. Mentally give ourselves a little pat on the back. We acknowledge that we've done something that's a little out of the ordinary for us. Tell ourselves good job. Reaffirm our motivation that this simple meditation, may it make on our mind stream an impression that will ripen in a way that benefits all living beings. So just think that way. Relax and bring your attention back into the room. So in Tibetan Buddhism, there's actually two forms of meditation. One is concentration meditation and one is analytical meditation. Concentration meditation is where we focus on an object. We use the breath in this meditation just now. It's always with us, so it's an easy one to work on. You'll see people meditate with a candle or a visualization of something. That's concentration meditation. Analytical meditation is where we pick a subject and then we work it out. Okay, we pick something that we're going to try to figure out and then we work with it. So the analogy would be that I'm a marathon runner and I've got, you know, Boston Marathon coming up in a few months. So I need to go out and I need to practice, I need to go to the gym, I need to do all these things in preparation for that. That's what concentration meditation is. We're teaching the mind to concentrate on something so that once we get better at being able to concentrate, then we can actually work with it. Okay, then we can work with the analytical meditation, then we can work with our mind with an actual subject because we've used that muscle a little bit more. Okay, now the trick is that the other analogy is that we're like a mechanic trying to work on a car that's racing down the freeway. Yeah,
It's a little hard to do, but that's exactly what we're doing with our mind. Okay? Our thoughts are just going, going, going. That's why we have to bring them down so we can concentrate, so we can actually focus and to do it. And that's basically what Buddhism is all about, working with the mind. So, any questions about what I've talked about so far? Pretty basic. Again, we're just getting through some of the basics here. What are we going to do for the rest of the time? The rest of tonight's class, we're going to go through just some basic information. This is not the discussion time. This is basically rapid fire facts about Buddhism for you, so that we're all starting from basically the same page. So we're going to give you a quick introduction to Buddhism in a nutshell. And what we're going to be doing for the next 5 weeks. I want to introduce Kadampa Center a little bit more to you. Then we're going to have a talk about Shakyamuni Buddha, a little bit of the history, and then we're going to start introducing the Four Noble Truths and what that is. So let's go through the Kadampa Center real quick. Kadampa Center is a Buddhist center in the Gelupa tradition. We have been here for 25 years now. You mentioned Don Brown. Okay, Don Brown is the founding member of Kadampa Center. He started Kadampa Center in his living room as a reading group way back in the day, and it's grown to, we have over, 300 active members and probably over 1,000 people that are attached to Kadampa Center in one way, shape, or form. So it's a very vibrant center. We have a phenomenal children's program that really focuses on the 16 guidelines. So it's taking, in many ways, the Buddhist trappings off of it and getting straight to things like generosity and ethics and things that anybody would want for their children. So it's a superior program that has actually gotten noticed from worldwide. Kadampa Center is part of the FPMT, the Foundation for the Preservation of the Mahayana Tradition. That is a mouthful. What does that mean? The FPMT. FPMT.org. You're going to want that website. FPMT.org. So way back in the 60s and 70s, when all of the things were happening with the Dalai Lama and a lot of these monks and stuff were heading over to Nepal and creating the monasteries over there, and the hippies were going over there to kind of hang out and enjoy some happy herbs and learn a little bit. A lot of the Westerners were heading over to that area, and there was a couple of monks over there that if all of the Westerners were coming to Nepal to learn about Buddhism, maybe we need to go to the West so that, we're more available to them. And so we had two monks. Now you can't see because the screen's in the way, but the Dalai Lama is there in the middle. He's the spiritual leader of all of the Tibetan schools. And we have Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Lama Yeshe are the two monks that are pictured on either side. Lama Yeshe has passed on. Lama Zopa Rinpoche is still alive, and he still teaches, and he still comes to Kadampa Center. He was just here last month. He travels the world. There are over 170 FPMT centers worldwide, everywhere from England to France. I mean, you name it. There's in Mexico. There's centers worldwide that are part of the FPMT center. So those are the two that started the FPMT center. We have two monks here, two Tibetan monks from India and Nepal here. Our resident teachers are Geshe Gelug Choda and Geshe Paulden Sangpo. So you hear the term Geshe. Geshe is a title. It's kind of like doctor. Okay, this means that they have done 30 plus years of study over in the monasteries. Geshe Paulden Sangpo actually escaped from Tibet when he was a child. At age 7, he escaped over the mountains. Sometime you might want to find out more about that story, because it's a fascinating story. I mean, he literally had to hide and only travel at night 21 days over the mountains as a child. Geshe Gelug Choda has been our resident teacher for maybe 15 years now. He speaks fluent English. If you do nothing else, if you have a major takeaway, come meet with Geshe. Come on Sunday when he's here. Our Sunday teachings are open. We have people of all faiths come, and he's phenomenal. And he's got I don't even know what to say about him. There's not enough that I can say about him. So, but he is 30-plus years. He's not only a Geshe, which, again, is a title. He is a Larampa Geshe, so he's like summa cum laude. Okay, he is, like, really high up there. And he is so cool. But he's also that humble monk. Okay, he's very, very humble. He will not tell you about all of this, but you can see him. I've got PowerPoints. Okay, I've got notes. I've got all this stuff. He sits, and he's got this Rolodex in his head because they all learn from oral tradition. And you can just watch him go through the files in his head. It's amazing on all of these teachings and stuff. But that's Geshe Gelug Choda. You'll hear us use the term Geshe La, Lama La, Tendrin La. You'll hear the La at the word. That's a form of respectful endearment. You could even say Sandy La. Okay, it's a reform of respectful endearment. Again, one of the things I'm going to be doing is I'm going to give you all this terminology so that you're comfortable that we're all on the same page. Ken Rinpoche, so you'll see some of the pictures and stuff. And honestly, after class, come on up. Check out the altar. We've got a book over there that tells you exactly what everything is in here, because I want you to be comfortable coming in here. This is called a Gompa, place of meditation. Everything in here is about your mind. Everything in here is literally symbolism to help you learn to work with your mind. You can actually look at some of these tankas on the wall, and that's a visual representation of a teaching. That is a PowerPoint. There's a lesson in each and every one of these, a specific lesson. These orange little boxes up here that look like that, those are the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha. Now, I could pull that down and we look at it, and it's all in Sanskrit or Tibetan. Okay, we're not going to understand it. But those are the 84,000 teachings of the Buddha. Why are there so many? Because your mind is different than your mind is different than your mind is different from my mind. So some of those things, sometimes you think, well, that's not what he said. He said this over here. But the way that something that works for you to understand may be completely different from her. And so there's no copyright on this stuff. Okay? So you can copy it. You can look at it. You can go do it. But we don't really study those because they're in another language. What we usually study is the commentaries. So a lot of the books that you see out in the bookstore and a lot of the things that Geshe-la will be explaining are the commentaries for things. Now, why am I telling you about this and why am I telling you about these teachers? Because I want you to understand the word lineage, okay? Lineage is a really critically important word in Buddhism, pretty much any type of Buddhism, whether it's Tibetan Buddhism, whether it's Zen Buddhism. The lineage is where these teachings have come from, okay? So our teacher is Geshe Gelug Choda. His teacher is Ken Rinpoche. Ken Rinpoche can tell you his teacher, okay? The Dalai Lama Ken Rinpoche, Geshe-la's teacher, is the abbot of Sarojay Monastery, which is one of the largest monasteries in India. And he was actually assigned as abbot of Sarojay Monastery by the Dalai Lama. Why is that important? Because they all talk. And I like to think that Geshe-la talks about to Ken Rinpoche, and Ken Rinpoche talks to the Dalai Lama about what happens here at Kadampa Center. So for all I know, they even said, he's leaving Buddhism in a nutshell tonight. So it's my own little story that I tell. But the fact that they can tell the lineage all the way back, they can actually follow that line all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. Okay? So when I was looking for a Buddha center, it was really important to me that I knew what the lineage was. Okay? I especially wanted a lineage that followed the Dalai Lama. Okay? Because that was part of what had always attracted me to Buddhism. And so I really wanted to make sure that the lineage that I was going to learn was in the Dalai Lama's lineage. So I knew what I was going to get when I came here. Okay, it's just like you guys picking a college to go to. You're going to pick a specific college because of what you're going to learn there. Same thing here. That's why the lineage is so very important. So we kind of follow that that line down. Okay, we're doing good. Surprisingly. Again, if you start having questions, go for it. Wait, microphone.
Okay, so
wait. I'm going to have you talk in the microphone.
Thanks. So that means they are different kind of Buddhism?
Yes.
And their philosophy, they are different? Every kind of Buddhism? How many Buddhism?
We'll talk about that a little bit in a little bit. That's a good question, so hold that thought because we will get to that. There are different kinds of Buddhism, okay, but they all have the core. They all have a core center to them. Okay, and why are they different? And again, we're going to talk about this pretty soon because that's a great question. They're different in many reasons just because of socioeconomic as it moved through. So let's hold that question. But there is, they all have the core. It's no different than Christianity that has, you know, the Methodists, and, you know, it's the same type of split up, but at the core, you know, it's similar. They just have different emphasis and different focuses. But that's a great question. There are different ones. We'll talk about those. Anybody else right now? Okay, so let's go down a little bit of Shakyamuni Buddha. Let's go there, shall we? Okay, a very brief history. Okay, and I am going to, like I said, man, I am skipping across the top. If y'all want a deep dive, there are a ton of books out there, and I can recommend a bunch of them that will tell you exactly when he was born, exactly when he died, and what he did all through his 80-something odd years. Okay, I'm not going there. Okay? One class I went to, they introduced that subject by saying he was a man, he was born, he lived, he died, and now that's it. I will say a little bit more. He was born over 2,500 years ago in India. Let's get into this a little bit. Okay, to a king and queen. Okay, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce those names. All right. When he was born to a king and queen in India, he was born into huge affluence. Okay, I mean, serious affluence even back in the day. They had a seer come to give a reading about this child, and the reading was that he would either become a great king and ruler or a great spiritual leader. Now, like any dad, that king wanted him to follow in his own footsteps. And so he literally raised him trying to hold everything else back that would cause more of a spiritual life, okay? So he sheltered him, just like we all do with our, how many parents in here? Okay? You know how we want to just wrap our kids in that cotton wool and we want to shelter them? Well, they did it to the extreme. Okay, this young Prince Siddhartha, he literally was kept in the palace and he only had beautiful people around him. It was said that he was very excelled in athletics and he was very good looking. Any you know, perfection of beauty that could be built around in this palace is all that he ever saw. They kept any issues and any problems away from him. So he had this like perfect life. And he didn't even know any different. But there was at a point in that life as a, probably in his 20s, that he and some of his servant friends snuck out of the palace. And again, I am totally paraphrasing here because we are skipping right along the top, so just go with me. They snuck out, okay, as kids do. Although he was a little bit older, wasn't really a kid. He was an adult by this time. They snuck out of the palace, and he saw what's called four sights. So he's out there. He saw four sights. One was a sick person. He had never seen a sick person before. So he's asking his servants, what's wrong? What's wrong with that person? And they had to try to explain sickness, okay? And so to somebody who's never seen that, so imagine that. You have never seen a sick person. You have never seen an old person because all you've been seeing all this time is beautiful people around you. Now all of a sudden you look. I mean, even here in America, we tend to put our elders in homes, don't we? They're not out there. They're not at home with us anymore. We tend to do this in America. I think in a lot of other countries, they have a little bit better. I'm not even going to go there. I'm going to get political on that one. We won't go there. But he never saw an old person. He never saw a dead body. How many people in this room have ever seen a dead body? How many people in this room have never seen a dead body? So that is actually a low number for me. Normally, it's probably more like 80% of the class is never seen. So this is a little bit of an anomaly for me because a lot of people just haven't ever seen a dead person. So he never saw that. He didn't even know what to think about that. So he's seeing all this suffering from age, from sickness, from death. And then he also saw a wandering mendicant, okay, a monk. He saw a wandering spiritual person that didn't seem to be upset about all of this stuff that he was seeing. Okay, now you've got this young man who's never seen any of this stuff, and he's devastated. And now you've got this monk that's living out here, but he seems to be okay with it. So he was trying to really figure this out. And he went back to the palace and he couldn't get over it. That now I'm gonna, that's gonna happen to me, that's gonna happen to my loved ones. He just couldn't deal. And so he left the palace. And again, I am so paraphrasing things here. But he left. Now he left this life of extreme affluence and he went all the way the other side. He went to extreme asceticism. Okay? You've all seen those pictures of the Buddha where he's almost like a skull. You can see every rib. He went all the way to the other extreme. He found some other people that were trying to do the same thing. They were trying to figure this out, and there was especially five of them that they all got together, and they were trying to meditate. They were trying to study. They were trying to answer some of these questions. But they had gone to such extremes that there was just, you know, nothing left of them. At one, he did this, I want to say, if my memory serves, you know, what, 6 or 7 years. He tried this way. So he's gone from one extreme to the other. The story goes that he had totally collapsed by the side of a river, and there was a boat that was going by with a musician on it. And he had what today would be called probably guitar or lute. And the musician was talking with him and saying that these strings, okay, have to be, they can't be too tight, they can't be too loose in order for this music to play perfectly. So it's basically that's where the knowledge of the middle way came, was you can't be too loose, you can't be too tight. He's gone from one extreme to the other. Now he's so sick that he can't meditate. So a young woman came and fed him and got him back to health, and then he went and he thought, I've got to figure this out, but it's more of a middle way. Okay, I can't go too far one way and too far the other way. And then he literally went and he sat underneath the Bodhi tree, and again, I'm paraphrasing totally, and he sat and he looked at his mind. And from that moment that he just sat and he basically told himself, I'm not going to move until I get this figured, and I'm just going to look at my mind. And again, different stories will say different things as to how long. Some of the stories are that the animals came and they took care of him and they fed him. The snails came and covered his head to keep him cool in the hot sun, and he was under the Bodhi tree. And at that time, he took it so far, and he saw his mind. He looked at his mind, and he started having those discoveries in his mind, those aha moments, and those realizations in his mind. We've all experienced where your mind tells you you can't do it. We've all experienced where you kind of are trying to do something, and you just have those doubts about yourself. And so at the end, you'll hear the terminology that Mara, okay, threw all of these doubts and obscurations at him. And that's really his mind was fighting with his mind. And literally some of the tankas that you see where he's reaching out and he's touching the ground with his finger, it's like he called the earth into witness that I can do this. I can look at my mind. I can become free from all suffering. And that's when he had the realization and he became enlightened. Okay, so enlightened. What is that? That's when he went from being Siddhartha Gautama to Shakyamuni Buddha. Buddha means enlightened one. Shakya means clan. He's from the Shakya clan. Muni means sage. And Buddha means enlightened one. Shakyamuni Buddha. All right. We all have the potential to be Buddhas. Okay, so Buddha means enlightened one, and we all have the ability to become Buddhas. We all have what they're going to call Buddha nature, and we'll get into some of this in a little bit. But what does that mean? What's that definition of enlightenment? Fully awakened, you wake up, you totally have removed all the negative states of mind, and you've fully developed your positive states of mind. That's the definition of enlightenment. Throughout this class, we're going to be having definitions. And that way we can make sure that we're all talking about the same thing, because there's a lot of terminology in Buddhism. Enlightenment means you're fully awakened, you have fully developed all virtuous states of mind, and you have removed all obscurations, all negative states of mind. Now, so here's the Buddha. He just became enlightened, right? So he's a man who has become enlightened. He is not a god. Okay? If he was a god, he would have been able to stand up and go, boom, you're enlightened. You're enlightened. You're enlightened. He's not a god. So he did the next best thing. He talks.
He's a teacher. He discovered enlightenment. He did not teach it. Like Sir Isaac Newton discovered the law of gravity. Okay? It's a natural law. It's the law of gravity. He didn't make it up. He discovered it. The Buddha is the same way. He didn't make this up. He discovered it. So we need to think of the Buddha as more of a discoverer. Does that make sense? Are you kind of following me here? He's not a god. Okay? So he became a teacher. Now I want to define teacher from a Buddhist perspective, and especially from a Tibetan Buddhist perspective. We talk about teachers here in the United States. We've got this professor at college. He's a teacher. You know, some of you, you know, you're going to say, Sandy's teaching this class. I'm leading this class. But we tend to use that word teacher pretty cavalierly. It's a teacher. It's a teacher. It's a teacher. In Buddhism, especially with Tibetan Buddhism, especially with these monks and stuff from India and Tibet and Nepal, teacher is a very special word, and it has a much deeper connotation, because a teacher with Tibetan Buddhism, there's a deeper responsibility between the teacher and student. Okay, so we don't use that word lightly in this class. I don't call myself a teacher. I say that I lead this class. I don't teach this class. There's a lot more phenomenal people that are true teachers here. But that teaching term is very, means a lot more to Buddhism than it does in the normal world. So he's teaching. So who were his first students? Well, his first students were those five monks that he went down that path of asceticism with. Okay, so when they first saw him, it's like they kind of discounted him because y'all left us. Okay, but then there's something different about you, so I guess we're going to listen, and we're going to learn. And so they actually sat, and he did his first teaching, and they call it the first turning of the wheel. Okay, so the turning of the wheel, the way I want you to kind of try to think about that is, you know when you have that all of a sudden, that realization that, oh, that's what that means. When you have a big moment where your life changes. Okay, that's why they call these the turning of the wheel. And the Buddha, basically there were three, some will say four, turnings of the wheel in the Buddha's life. Okay, so the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, literally was at Sarnath. We'll talk about that in just a second. But the wheel of Dharma, what does Dharma mean? You hear that term all the time. The actual definition of Dharma is that which holds or protects. We'll use that word two different ways. Conventionally, it's the teachings and the actions, okay? So this is Dharma material. This is Dharma material. These books are Dharma material. They contain teachings, okay? Our actions, the things that we do, are Dharma. The ultimate is when you have those aha moments, because the ultimate is when your mind actually has that realization that you have attained. So all of a sudden, when you have those aha moments as you're working with this stuff, that's Dharma. So it's those actual things. So again, the major takeaway from this class, it's all about your mind. Everything that I talk about, everything you see in here, everything that you read, always remember it's about your mind. Okay? So the first turning at Sarnath in India, okay, is the Four Noble Truths. This is handout number 4. I've got it up here because we're going to break this down. Okay, we're going to do this every night for, you know, the next 5 weeks. We're going to be getting deeper and deeper into this particular teaching, because we'll use this to show you how to break down some of these Buddhist teachings. Okay, so you're going to see this a lot. Get this handout, because we're going to break this down throughout our time. Okay, so he did this big teaching at Sarnath. He did this big teaching with these monks. And then literally the spread of Buddhism, you know, throughout India, Sri Lanka, Asia, Southeast Asia, China, Japan, Tibet, literally Buddhism has gone throughout. And it's actually gone into countries and then kind of disappeared and then had resurgence. This is where you talk about your different Buddhism. Okay, so there's many different Buddhist traditions that come about because of the socio-geographic variation, ethnologies, okay, and you can actually see this in some of the Buddhist iconography. So the Buddhist statues that you see that have those long pointy hats, you know, that's Thailand, Okay, so everything kind of takes on the country where it is, or the area where it is, the different focuses that happen, but you'll see it in the looks. Tibetan Buddhism has a lot of very, very bright colors, and a lot of the way that they'll talk about that is because up in Tibet and Nepal, it's very cold, so there's not a lot of colors. They brought out the color, you know, literally as a way to make things brighter and prettier. They even talk about Tibetan Buddhism as being a very gaudy. Okay, we have a lot of bling. Okay, but the core of all of these is the same. The core of Buddhism, you'll find, is the same no matter what strain that you're going to do. Now, there's literally two strains of Buddhism, two main strains of Buddhism, the Hinayana, Theravada, and the Mahayana. Hinayana focuses on the individual release from suffering, nirvana. Okay, Mahayana is the universal, so it's not only nirvana, but enlightenment. And Mahayana is more for the benefit of others. I'm going to reach enlightenment to benefit all of you and all sentient beings. Now, they actually talk about these in some of the books as being the lesser group, vehicle and the greater vehicle. It's a little bit of a misnomer. Because you actually, if you were going to save somebody from drowning, you better know how to swim, right? So the Mahayana, you have to study the Hinayana in order to be studying the Mahayana. The Mahayana is just saying you can do them at the same time. Okay, so you have to learn how to swim before you can help somebody from drowning. Hinayana is nirvana. Mahayana, the main goal is to be able to reach enlightenment for the benefit of all. Any questions? I'm going through this a little quickly, but we'll get to some of the... The facts are one thing for me. It's the concepts that I actually will have discussion and kind of enjoy. For Tibetan Buddhism, there's really four schools of Tibetan Buddhism, and all the denominations are found here in the West. Nyingma, Kagyu, Sakya, and Gelug. The Dalai Lama is actually in the Gelug school, okay? But he's the spiritual leader of all of them. He used to be the political leader of everything, but he let that go for the benefit of Tibet and the benefit of Buddhism a few years ago. But he is the spiritual leader of all of the traditions. The Kadampa Center is for the practice of Tibetan Buddhism in the Gelugpa tradition. So we're Gelug. And again, this goes back to the lineage. Gelug is very methodical. It's very scholarly. So it's very much a teaching tradition. Okay, when you come on Sunday, this is not like church where Geshe-la's up here giving him sermon. This is more like a class. Okay, so we consider these are teachings. It's more of a class type of situation. You come with your notebooks, you know, ask your questions. It's definitely more of a class type situation. So literally, again, I'm going to say it over and over again so that you get it, everything is about the mind. It's the mind, and your mind is different than your mind is different than your mind. Developing positive states of mind leads to happiness. Removing negative states of mind, they cause suffering. So it sounds so simple, isn't it? That is the definition of enlightenment that we just talked about. So let's do this just for fun. What are some positive states of mind? Gratitude, sure. Very good. Thankful, gratitude. Okay, very positive. What else?
Happiness.
Yeah.
Empathy.
Generosity.
Compassion.
Patience,
understanding,
I mean, we could just list them, joy, there's positive, these are all positive, right? What about negative?
Jealousy.
Anxiety. Anger.
Fear.
Hate.
Greed.
Okay, now for kicks and giggles, watch this. What's the antidote to greed?
Generosity.
What's the antidote? Oh, boy, we missed a big one over here.
Oh, yeah.
There's like too duh for us, right? We're all past that. It's just, okay, so there, right? Fear.
Courage.
Knowledge. Okay. My spelling is not good. Fear could actually go to a number of these, actually. Okay. Anger? There's one big one. Really? It's right there. Okay. I'm going to go into this a little bit because it'll shock you. I used to, so we started going through this, and everybody started talking about anger because it's such a big part of what we try to work with. Yes, sir?
Can you tell us what
I'm sorry, I've circled patience. I've circled patience. So I used to tell myself, I used to say, I'm so not an angry person. I'm like the one of the, you know, just mellow people I know. I'm not angry. And then I realized through the teachings that actually impatience is that first step of the rung on anger. It's the first place because you don't just blaze into anger, do you? Something happens and it starts to stew and it grows. So once you start to break it down, patience and impatience is really actually one of the first rungs toward anger, isn't it, when you really think about it? Okay? Love and hate obviously go across. Jealousy. Jealousy and gratitude or joy kind of go across. Some of these blur a little bit, but they're actually, we'll get into some of these where you can see that here's the antidotes to some of these things. This is part of where that analytical meditation comes in, because once you learn to recognize these things and you have the antidote to work on them, that's part of what you're doing in meditation. So, where am I time-wise? 14, I'm doing okay. Okay, let's go into... I just want to make sure I cover everything I'm supposed to. So we did that. Okay. So... we're going through all of this stuff. You can see some of these, what these are. So you can now understand a little bit why developing the positive states of mind, you'd be a happier person, wouldn't you? If we were all over on that side of the board, if we only felt those things, would you be happier? If you got rid of those things? It's kind of duh, isn't it? Seems pretty easy, doesn't it? It should be easy, I would think. But there you go. Okay, so... let's go here to these Four Noble Truths. So, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. There's a lot of suffering up there, isn't it? I used to get that all the time. All you guys ever talk about is suffering. You know, where's the happiness in that? And honestly, flip it. The truth of happiness, the truth of the cause of happiness, the truth of the start of happiness or more happiness, and the truth of the path to happiness. I mean, if we wrote it like that, everybody would, like, get it, right? So think about it like that, because that's exactly what this is. So you take a look at Geshe-la, take a look at Geshe Sangpo. I mean, they study this stuff, and they are the most joyful people I see, and they study suffering. Why do they study suffering? Because that way they can get rid of it. So think about the Four Noble Truths. Just flip it. If it helps you think about that, right? Just flip it around. Then people won't be going, oh, you never talk about a suffering. But now let's break this down. Now, again, this class is more just getting started, and then we'll start. I've got to start watching my time just a little bit. So let's look at this as What is suffering? Now, again, we're going to be doing this the entire class. We're going to be working with this. So what is suffering? So I want you to take the word suffering and I want to change it, because we have our Western idea of what suffering is, and that's only a fraction of what this means. Okay? So I want you to think of the word dukkha. Okay? Dukkha, which is basically the Sanskrit word for suffering. But it has so much more meaning to it. Okay, so dukkha is Sanskrit, Pali, Tibetan, means something. It's a Buddhist term that has a lot more meaning than just what we think of. I'm going to go straight here because I think you'll understand a little bit better. Okay, so what kind of suffering am I talking about? Okay, we're going to say the suffering of pain. Ow, I hurt myself. I just got hit by a car. I just cut myself with a kitchen knife. Ouch, that hurts. That's suffering of pain. That's what we tend to think of in the Western world of suffering. That's basically all we tend to think of as suffering, right? The suffering of pain. There's another type of suffering. The suffering of change. Okay? I'm too cold when I'm in here. And so I turned the heat on, and now I'm too hot. And now I'm too cold. I go out in the sun because I want to get a tan. Now I get too hot. Then I get too cold. I bought a new car, and it just got hit. And it's not new anymore. I dropped my iPhone, and it broke. So it changed. My iPhone changed because first it was good and new, and then it broke, and now it's not. The suffering change. Our life changes, you know? The suffering of change, things changing, all right? That's a major suffering. I ordered chocolate cake and you brought me banana, you know, or carrot cake. That's not what I wanted, so you changed on me. So the change, suffering of change. Then we have the pervasive, okay? Pervasive suffering. That's kind of, this is a tough one to understand, and I'm going to go through it kind of quickly. Again, some of the other classes you'll be able to deep dive. Because we live in this world, we suffer. Because we live in this world, we suffer. We're going to be born, we're going to live, we're going to die. Our friends are going to die. This is the world that we live in. Okay? There's this kind of constant undertow of these things that just go wrong in this world that we have no control over. Okay, you can break them down, but that pervasive, this is the world that we live. This is the, not really samsara because that's a different terminology, but just because, that's pervasive. And again, there's a lot, it's almost like when we get the things we want. We suffer because we can't hang on to them. It's going to change. You know, so that can almost be said as when we get the things we want. So think of suffering as dukkha so that you get this larger terminology. Now, if you look at this as kind of as a doctor, okay, so if you're going through a medical analysis, what's the truth of suffering, this first one, the first noble truth, what does it take? It's kind of like the 12-step program, okay? So first you have to admit that you're suffering, right? Before you would even start on the path, right? You admit that you're sick. I wish I had a different color, okay? Admit that you're sick. Admit you're sick, right? That's what this is about. You got to admit you're sick. The truth of the cause, you've gone to the doctor, you've admitted you're sick, and now you're going to go to the doctor, and the doctor's going to give you a diagnosis. Oh, you're sick with this. So we're going to diagnose the illness, the sickness. Okay, now he's going to give you the medicine. Number three is the medicine. Right? So you admitted you're sick, you went to the doctor, he diagnosed it, now he gave you the medicine. The truth of the path means you've got to actually take the medicine. Okay, I don't know about you. I've got a husband that will do all the stuff. He'll go to the doctor, and then he'll get the medicine, and we'll take it for 2 days, and then it sits on the counter. Okay, and I have to watch it. When did you take your last pill? Did you take a pill today? Did you take it? I'm counting them out there. I don't think you took one. Okay, you know that this is going to help you, but if you don't take it, take the medicine. Do the practice. That's the Four Noble Truths in a nutshell. And we can apply that to almost everything we do in life. But it truly is that simple. Seems simple, but it's hard. So all of these things that we're talking about, it's all right there. It is all right there. The path is laid out. They have spelled everything out. The Buddha wrote everything out. We have the Lam Rim, which is the path, laid out, and it's even in sections and broken out. But it's the doing of it that's so hard. Okay? But that's why they call it practice. Okay? We say, you'll hear the terminology, I'm a practicing Buddhist, because we're practicing. It's an everyday life. This is not, to me, this is not a religion. This is a way of life. It is a practice. All right. Oh, man. Questions? Okay, we'll break this down and we're going to get into this, but at least it gives you that kind of overall, you know, simplicity of it. Honestly, it is that simple. To explain it is that simple. But we'll get into it. We'll break it down a little bit longer. We have, again, so the path, the Lam Rim, is another term you should know. I'll put it up here for now. Lam Rim, okay, that is actually the graduated path to enlightenment, all right? Now, it doesn't mean gradual, it doesn't mean that you go here, it means graduated. So it's a step-by-step path to get you to remove the obscurations and become enlightened. So we actually have, we have courses, we've got the studies, we've got it all, we'll explain it a little bit more, but it's all there. It's in all these writings, it's been around. But that, you can see basically how that works. Questions. Now, this was a lot of, I just threw a lot of information at you. Okay. Now, what we're going to do for the next four classes, we'll start breaking some of this down. We'll start more discussion, and we're going to start talking about more of the concepts of karma, the concepts of emptiness, some of the concepts that go along with it, and some of the steps and the practices as we do it. But again, we're not going to deep dive on any of these things, but we're just going to go along. We're going to talk about the mind, how to work with the mind, what the mind actually is. We'll talk about rebirth. We'll talk about some of these big Buddhist concepts that, you know, nobody's drinking the Kool-Aid here, okay? It's all good. It's not a cult. None of those things. It's a practice. This is not even a religion the way that we look at it. It is a way of life, a philosophy, and it's a practice. And we get the tools to try to help us lead happier lives. And it works for me. And I do these practices, and right about the time I think that I'm getting it, it's like something will happen to show me that, you know, I got to do it again, got to do it over. It's one of the reasons why I like leading this class, is because it brings me back to basics. It always brings me back to basics, because you know what? Right about the time you start thinking, oh, I know that. So it's just a reminder, and it's a good. So those are the things we're going to do over the next four more classes, hour and a half. We'll do a little bit of meditation before and at the end. Again, it's having a little bit of that awareness. The handouts are on the website. I'm going to do a quick generosity announcement. Everything that we do here at the center, all of these classes, everything that we do, we offer for free. We are one of the few FPMT centers in the world that is able to function on what's called a free dana, D-A-N-A, generosity, a free dana practice. Most of the centers have to charge. We have been able to get by on the generosity of our members and our visitors. If anything that you see in the next 5 weeks helps or anything, I would ask that you might think about making a donation. We have donation boxes in the front. Every little dollar helps. All of us here are here as volunteers, and we just use the money to basically pay the mortgage and the air conditioning and the lights. So, and generosity is one of the six perfections. So we'll get to that. I want to do just a brief ending meditation. How much time do I have? Wow, 4 minutes. Okay, so here's what we're going to do, because we really don't have time to do a full-on meditation. But we set a motivation. So we talked about a motivation And then we talked about a dedication. What do I mean by that? We set a motivation and intention for our meditation, and then we set a dedication that kind of seals it. Tomorrow morning, when you wake up, I want you to set a motivation for the day. Because we do these bookends, and I do these bookends. I do intentions and motivations at the beginning of the day, and I do it at the end of the day because it helps me be more mindful. I'll actually set a motivation before I go into a business meeting, okay? And it's not a motivation about the goal that I want out of the business meeting, but I'll set a motivation that, you know what, I know these people are going to be challenging. I'm going to try to treat them with respect no matter what they do, because, I mean, we live in the real world out there, and it can get pretty frustrating sometimes. But I'm not going to let them fluster me. I'm going to try to stay calm. I'm going to try to treat them with respect. Doesn't always work. It's a practice. I'm practicing. I'm not a Buddha. But it helps me to stay more mindful so I can do better. Okay, and I've been doing this for a lot of years, so I'm better now than I was last year, than I was 5 years ago. I can go into meetings and hold it and be more mindful and be more careful and not get angry with people. Okay, so tomorrow morning I want you to try to set a motivation for the day, and when you go to bed, I want you to think, wow, okay, what did I do good today? I'm really happy about myself for that. That was excellent. What did I do bad that maybe I could do better tomorrow? And maybe the next, 6 days until we meet again, maybe try to do that in the morning and at night. I'm going to give you little things to do, little practices, homework. Okay? Try to set an intention. If nothing else, if you can only do it one time, do it in the morning and at night. If you can think about doing it with activities, then go for it. Okay? Thank you all for coming. I appreciate you taking your time to sit and listen to me babble. I promise we will do more discussion next time. This was just tough to get through all of this. Any questions, let me know. We'll be around. I've got other people here that are very, very much more, better, I think, than I am at explaining some things. So feel free to, I'm pointing. Okay. Everybody's here. So thank you so much. Have a good night. Drive safe.